Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, November 11th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us here today, but first, let's get to the market report, because Wendy is waiting online for us. Let's go to gold today, a little bit of pressure. Banks and post offices were closed today. Stock markets were open. Bond market was closed as today is Veterans Day. So you have gold down 440 today at 1,085. Silver was down 12 at 1,441. Platinum was down 18. Big hit on both platinum and palladium. $885, $200 spread between platinum and gold. Palladium down 23 at 578. And U.S. dollar today, a little bit softer, 0.22 at 98.98, beating on crude oil, 1.20 to the downside at 43.01. And you have the paper markets today, a little bit of pressure, Dow down 56 at 17.701, the NASDAQ down 16 at 5,067, and the S&P down 6, 2,075. 10-year yield up 2.34%. Euro is still holding at 107, up 0.18, and pretty flat across the Asian and European markets overnight. And that's it for the market report. We have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melanie. Hello, Al. How are you?
Good. How are you, Wendy?
I'm awesome, as usual. I'm your herbalist, and I bring you the topic of organoids. Do you know what that is?
Sounds like creatures from another planet. Sounds like a 1960s space film to me.
Well, you're close. Actually, it means mini organs, and they're being grown in our laboratories to, you know, represent a part of an organ which, you know, we may need in some point. They are growing brains, intestine, prostates, kidneys, thyroids, retinas, and livers in the lab. And researchers are designing and growing these human organs for, they say, medical research right now, but we're told it's for them to better understand diseases like autism and schizophrenia. But last August, it was reported that Stanford University has several balls of what appear to be white flesh floating in dishes representing mini brains, And there's a rumor that scientists are working on building a small fetal brain. However, there really isn't any journal articles confirming that right now. So the goal of the organoid scientists, and yes, that's a specialty, is to manufacture organs from human tissue to transplant into humans down the road. So these organoid tissues are being used also to test drugs rather than the pharmaceuticals having to use animals or too many animals for that. Now, there's a quote here I want to read you from Arnold Kriegstein, MD, Biomedical Research University of California, San Francisco. He says, organoids are poised to make a major impact on the understanding of disease and also human development. I don't know what he means by that latter part, but that's
what
he
says. They're going to put a bunch of lab rats out of work, aren't they?
Well, science, you know, they want to improve on the human being. They think it's left undone for some reason. And according to research, the human body has a lot of different kinds of cells. For instance, your skin cells are different from your brain cells, but they do have similar DNA strands, and science has taken advantage of that. Now, in 2012, researchers discovered how they could take a cell from a human body and convert that cell into what they want it to be, you know, for organ crafting, and they could do that by switching on or off certain genes in the cell. So what they wind up having is essentially a stem cell, which scientists can influence with certain chemical signals to guide the development of that cell into a specific organ. So research has advanced from basically the cells that are growing flat in the dishes to three-dimensional shapes, because the cells, when they get organized, they chemically communicate and they tend to form a shape.
Well, let me ask you this. If they are creating cells, they can take one cell, they could turn it into a brain cell, they could turn it into a liver cell, they could turn it into a muscle cell, depending on how they treat it. When they create, for example, liver cells, now you're going to say, okay, we're going to take this cell, we're going to make a liver out of it. Are they making an undifferentiated liver, a pile of liver cells, but it doesn't have the blood vessels and whatever else on the inside that makes it a liver? Do you understand what I'm saying? Not just the cells, not going to buy a pound, let's get a pound of liver up here. No, that's not what we're talking about. Are they making a liver complete with, you know, the maybe even nerve cells that belong? I assume there have to be some nerve cells in a liver.
Well, we're getting to that. Actually, what you just mentioned is what they do have is basically an organ in a primitive state. They can just get so far, and they're still working on the second or third phase of growing these organs, okay? Here's a quote from Marcin Koth. He's PhD neuroscience, and he's a chemist at the Cognition Institute at Plymouth University, UK. He says, any technique that gives us something like a brain that we can modify and work on and watch as it develops has to be exciting, but just how exciting will depend on the results it produces, end of quote, which is true. So they're making headway, but they're not quite there yet, Al. According to research, Madeline Lancaster, perhaps her quotes will help you understand. She's a medical researcher at the Council Laboratory of Molecule Biology in Cambridge, England. She says, all these white fleshy balls, there's 400 of them, by the way, floating around in these dishes in the lab, she says, are different parts of brains. Okay, so she says they call them mini brains, and the scientists will connect them eventually, the different parts of these brains, to each other so that they can communicate. She says, but right now, the communication from these brains is not a normal brain communication. She compared it to an analogy of an airplane that's put together improperly and it's unable to fly. So scientists are going to build a full human brain but in the lab, but it's just a matter of time. So right now what they've done is they have the parts of the brain that they've been successful at growing is the largest part. It's called the cerebral cortex. So in this area of your brain, we find the higher functions of thought. Typically, there are four parts or lobes to the cerebral cortex. There's the frontal lobe, parietal lobe, occipital lobe, and temporal lobe. And in these lobes are housed your language, your information processing, motor skills, vision, speech. So in other words, your cerebral cortex allows humans to resolve problems, have emotions, complete their thoughts, have coordination in varied movements, involuntary, involuntary, also information processing from sight, sound, smells, and touch, and also your speech articulation. So, but they really haven't overcome this obstacle, Al, of taking the brain balls in the dish and the next level, taking it to the next level would be a blood supply so the tissue can mature. So
that's why
this
these...
So this is why these are just
balls that are floating in fluid because they don't have any means of feeding themselves. If you had one of these balls that was the size of a regular brain, it would rot because you wouldn't be able to get nourishment to the cells that are in the interior of the ball. There's no circulation system. So you got to have a relatively small ball. I assume that's the reason.
Yeah, it's about the size of a pencil eraser, basically. So basically these are brains in what they call a primitive state. But when scientists overcome this ethical problem of manufacturing a full human brain, they still have to find a way to implant memories and a consciousness. Now, personally, I think a brain without a consciousness is a big mistake, and I think only God can handle that part.
The whole thing becomes strange because you're talking about when they create these brains, and you said they want these little brain balls to communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are they going to communicate? They've got to have input from something like eyes and ears and sensory, your touch and taste and so on, smell. What can they communicate if they don't have any, I mean, if they're not hooked up to something that senses things?
Well, I think what they'll do is they'll have some other form of stimulation initially, because right now what the balls are communicating with is chemicals, you know, chemical exchanges. That's how they're communicating. So they'll use chemicals and maybe electrical impulses initially, but, you know, it's still a ways off. But here's what Arnold Craigstein, that MD, that biomedical research physician in San Francisco, he says, no one would have thought 10 years ago we'd be able to do what we do now. However, 10 to 20 years down the road, I have no idea how far along we will be. End of quote. Well, that's scaring me.
I understand. They're looking to be able to do things with brains. We're saying, well, we're just going to do it with these little brains. Don't worry about a thing. We're not going to do this to your brain, Wendy. We're just going to do it with the little brain balls over here. So pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain.
I know.
I mean, what are they learning?
Well, I know. Well, here's what Norwegian peer review journal El Vizier said about this whole thing. They said they are even suggesting that in the future, multiple organoids could be combined to create a complex system, a human in a dish, if you will. End of quote. They want to build a whole human eventually, Al.
It's not bad enough we spend so much time on a couch. Now they'll just put on a TV set and you can sit there in your dish and watch the late night show.
Nice. Well, the organoids are also being used now to treat or test new drugs. So the human tissue, they want to see how the human tissue will react to the medication. So in the Netherlands, the United States, and the UK, they are testing new cancer drugs on organoid tissue. So the organoids are speeding up the drug research by bridging that gap between screening compounds and to go into the clinical trials. Now, according to the Journal of Advanced Drug Delivery Review, they say the organoids can help drug manufacturers make drugs to target organs. They attempt to precisely measure how toxic the drug will be to a liver or to a digestive tract, et cetera, before it even hits the conventional human trial testing. So the organoids at some point may even make human trials irrelevant. Now, some scientists think that this drug testing in vitro with organoids to create a biomimicking, if you will, they say it doesn't offer the same environment as a human condition to accurately predict the effects of the new drugs. So they say that there's refinement issues and there's consistency issues that need to be addressed. And science also has taken certain primitive organoid tissue and transplanted it into a mouse, two mice, where it develops, it matures, has that blood flow, and it had no rejection response. So this is where science is going to go as a marketing tool, is they're going to say organoid tissues have low rejection. If zero rejection, you won't have to take those expensive, you know, transplant drugs for life. Now, here's the rub with the organoids.
So what you're saying, let me just see if I understand this, or at least what you may be implying, is that, for example, you have a heart attack and part of your heart is damaged by that illness. So they essentially just come up here and they plaster a layer of new heart muscle, heart tissue, and the heart itself will generate the blood vessels and arteries that go up into this plaster?
Well, not exactly.
I mean,
what they would have to do is take tissue from the heart patient and build an organoid heart from his DNA tissue. And that way it wouldn't be rejected by his body.
Okay.
But it could take up to a year to make a heart right now. They don't have the technology to speed that up right now. But I'm just saying down the road, that's what they're going to probably use as a benefit, that you won't have organ rejection. But when they're testing these chemicals for drugs, if they're going to test, let's say, 1,000 chemical drug compounds, they usually use 50,000 mice to test it. When they use organoid tissues, they can test 1,000 drug compounds and use just one mouse. So this is why, you know, this whole area, this specialty of science has got several avenues of benefit, if you see what I'm saying.
Well, like I say, a whole bunch of mice are going to be going hungry. What are they going to do if they can't be lab rats? I mean, all the little mice, they wanted to grow up to be a lab rat. Now their mom says, no, you're going to have to get a job as a, I don't know.
I just think it's interesting with the organoid tissue being coded to your DNA, because it's really from some of your cells that they make it out of. It's almost like, you know, when some of your high-tech cars now, if you got all these little modules you have to replace from time to time, and those modules are like coded to the VIN number of the car, or they won't work properly.
Yep.
So it reminds me of, you know, plugging in parts to a car. But it's really human tissue that they're going to be doing. Well, here's one question I had. Maybe you go with me on this, Al. I wonder if down the road, when they perfect all this, if organoid transplanted body parts will come with a warranty. For instance, a natural heart can beat 3.3 million times if you live to be 80. So will an organoid heart have such longevity, or will patients have to take out another policy? I don't know.
Well, maybe they'll come with a mortgage. And if you don't pay the mortgage on your new heart, maybe they'll repossess it. Did you think about that, Wendy?
No, that's
it's all about the money. It's not whatever they're doing here, it may be putting the mice out of business, but it won't have anything to do with reducing costs.
I personally prefer to keep my original equipment. So what I do is I try to cleanse and nourish the body so I don't have failure. there's herbs that help remove toxins, strengthen the immune system, so it can protect your organs. So if folks out there want to learn how to do that, stay off the cocktail drugs, call us at Apothecary Herbs. We'll send you a free catalog. And that number is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. 229-3663, or visit us on the web at thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, Al.
Right.
Thanks, Melanie.
Wait a second. We still got another minute and a half here.
Is my clock fast?
Well, neither that or mine's slow. But Frank hasn't started playing the music yet, which means probably it's not time for our break. So
Frank's been late before, though.
I know that, but he won't admit it. We try to remind him and make him confess these things, but he hasn't done so.
Let me ask you this.
What do you see in terms of the general public being more sensitive, less sensitive, generally indifferent to being responsible for their own health? You've got about a minute to answer.
Well, I think it's a mixture of things. I know men don't like to go to the doctor, so a lot of times they'll look for alternatives. And then it just depends on how proactive a person is and how turned off they are to, you know, the pharmaceutical end of healthcare and the surgery part, because that's what they have. They have surgery, they have drugs. They really don't heal anything or cure anything. They have disease management. So It's a white man's way of doing it. It's a lazy man's way, because staying healthy does take a bit of work, and it is our responsibility. So if you're leaning towards being lazy and more irresponsible with health, aside from having genital defects and things, then, yeah, then you're going to see more people sway that way. Lately, though, I see people, you know, worried down the road financially what will happen if they can't get their medications, and they're working hard to get off of them.
Well, the world is certainly becoming a stranger and spookier place. They're trying to make masses of brain and liver and heart and keep it in a jar someplace. It's all beyond me. It's strange, strange, strange. Wendy, we have to now we have to go before Frank starts running the music. All right, so thanks very much. Appreciated the report. Very interesting. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in about 2.5 minutes. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Did you watch the debate last night?
No, I didn't.
It'll be the last one that I watch. It was long. It was, you know, the same old, same old. And not a lot of, you know, the questions were pretty much the same questions that are asked, you know, maybe with a little bit... you know, a little bit nicer in tone and so forth, but, you know, it was pretty much the same thing. And, So it'll be the last one that I watch. I think the next the debate will be, I think, 10 weeks, right before, or 10 days before Christmas, I believe, will be the next debate. But, yeah, I'm pretty much worn out, Al, with the with the election already.
Well, I had no radio program. I do a two-hour radio program therefore, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't. So that's my excuse. I'm sticking to it. But do have a report here from Drudge, who won the fourth Republican debate. Bush, there were 1% of the people who responded to the poll said Bush won. That's just 1%. 5% said Carson won. That's not very good. 24% said Cruz won, which is number two, according to this poll. Fiorina, 4%. That's going nowhere. Kasich, 2%, going nowhere. Paul, 16%. He's rising a little bit. Rubio, 14%. Okay, Trump was a big winner, 35%. According to this poll, conducted 332,000 votes. And, you know, it's apparently this poll was conducted by Drudge. So, I don't know. You'll see other polls before we're done. But this is probably representative. Jeb Bush just isn't going to cut it.
Jeb Kasich, I mean, he was a hateful little guy.
Yeah, well, he's.
I don't like him at all.
He's trying to be a liberal. Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he's trying to be a liberal, and I don't think the Republicans are going to have that. Well, they'll vote for Hillary before they vote for him.
Kasich won't be there in the next election. He'll be on the bottom tier. He won't be there much longer. I don't think anybody really stood out. They had their little one-liners and so forth. And, Trump did what he normally does. I don't think he said anything that was, you know, you just have to love his expressions. And
yeah, I get that.
He's entertaining, and I think people like him for that.
Yeah, I know. I think these are not necessarily this poll. These poll numbers don't necessarily represent who won and who lost.
No, I don't know.
They represent popularity poll.
Yeah.
I have a hunch that if you'd taken the same poll and they hadn't had the debates, I think you'd probably get pretty much the same numbers. There's some movement. How much is this just a popularity poll? How much of this reflects movement? Because of the debate, and I don't have an answer for that.
There was one person that did stand out above all the other debates, and I think it was just because of the way they had longer to speak. Each one had, pretty much equal amount of time, and that was Rand Paul.
Yeah.
He had color in his face. He looked rested. He looked, he had, some oomph. He was, he was good. And yeah. I think if I saw any changes in any of the candidates, it would have been him. So does that mean
he got a long ways
debate? No, but I saw the biggest change in him. And he did say some good things. He was able to counter Rubio and so forth, and his true conservatism came out that hasn't before. But
I think Paul, we can start looking at some of these candidates and wondering about their standing as a vice presidential candidate. For example, what would happen if Donald Trump were nominated and he picked Rand Paul as a vice president?
My prediction?
Yeah.
I think if Donald Trump chose someone on that stage.
Carson?
No. It would be
Fiorina?
Nope.
Mm.
Cruz. I think it would be Cruz.
Yeah.
Because Cruz is beginning to really warm up to sort of Trump, just the little things that he says and so forth. And I think it would be Cruz.
Cruz, according to this poll, has eclipsed Ben Carson. Carson is now according to the poll, 5%. Carson was right up there with Trump, and now Carson has fallen behind, and Cruz has begun to approach Trump. He's 24% on this poll. Trump is 35%. Trump's leading. Cruz is number two.
And
makes sense. Those numbers hold, assuming that if the nominations were, if we held the convention tomorrow and the rest of that, who gets nominated? Probably Trump. probably Cruz vice president. That makes sense.
Trump, I believe, would choose, because Trump is all about winning. And he's not going to choose a vice president or a running mate that is going to hinder him. So he would choose the number two person. Whoever's number two, that's who Trump would choose. Unless it was Kasich or Bush or someone like that, then no, I don't think he would choose them.
No.
But
no, that's not going to happen. Kasich isn't going to be revived. Bush is dead.
If number two is Carson I'm not even so sure he would choose Rubio, but if it was Cruz, absolutely. He would choose the second in line just to win.
Well, that's where maybe that will be perhaps. We'll watch and see what happens. I mean, Trump can fall. You know, he's not guaranteed to get the nomination. But he's certainly.
Well, for a man who doesn't say anything but the same thing, it surprises me that he gets.
Stick the message. If it works, don't quit.
Yeah, but, you know.
I agree that it's the same old story and the rest of it. But part of what's happening with Trump is that no one really seems able to attack him. It may be he doesn't have anything new to say, but on one level he doesn't need anything new to say because nobody's found any, you know, photographs of him and some strange woman or whatever. Everybody else, Carson has had his little problem with the press. Rubio's having a problem with what did he do with the money and the rest of that sort of thing. Everybody else, while they're attacking each other, Trump is just sitting there and he's simply, you know, thumbing his nose and saying, you got nothing on me. And that would be interesting. All by itself, that's interesting information. Imagine we have someone running for the presidency who doesn't have any skeletons in his closet. That's hard to imagine. You can't even imagine that, Paul. You know, there should be conspiracy theories and rumors and stories. And, oh, Trump did this, that. No, they're not there. They just say, well, he doesn't say much and he doesn't add anything new to say. Yeah, but he doesn't. So far, they haven't uncovered any scandals in his background. And that's all by itself. That may be a recommendation. Let's vote for the guy who doesn't have any scandals. We haven't done that in so many years. I don't know how we can.
The reason he doesn't have the scandals, though, is because he is a multi-billionaire.
Well, not only that.
I mean, when pardon?
He's been in the public eye so much in the past decade that if there's anything sneaky going on, it should have been uncovered a long time ago.
Or covered up.
If it can be covered up. I mean, like Hillary can't cover up what she's done.
She's not a billionaire. There is a difference.
Yeah, but she's
there is a big difference.
He has political power that he didn't have. He had wealth power, didn't have political power. He's been there, and he's just let it all hang out kind of guy. Here I am. This is what I'm doing. Now what? I win, you lose. You know? And maybe that's part of his success. The rest of these guys, they're going to uncover each other's, you know, secrets, their skeletons and the rest of that. So, oh, look what I saw pictures of so-and-so. And Trump is just going to sit there and say the same old thing and nobody's going to get anything on him. Or maybe they will, but they haven't so far. Yes, Melody? Well, I'm not sure what happened there, but Melody appears to have been cut off for some reason. And that being the case, then I guess...
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
You have to leave that little mute button alone, Melody, during the program. Can't be pushing the mute button.
Well.
All right. Now,
I didn't want the listeners to hear...
Uh-huh. That's what it is.
Ruby. Anyway, what's next?
I don't know. What is next? Let's see what we've got here. Well, oil prices forecast to stay low until 2020. This is from the Associated Press. Oil prices are likely to remain low over the next 5 years because of plentiful supply and falling demand in developed countries. This is from the International Energy Agency. The Paris-based body, which advises developed countries on energy policy, said it expects oil prices to return to $80 per barrel in 2020 with further increases after that. Oil prices are down more than 50% since the middle of last year. On Tuesday, U.S. crude oil was trading for $43.95 a barrel. If oil prices are down, you have to wonder what this means exactly. We can sit back and say, well, it's because we've increased the supply. Well, we've increased the supply at $100 a barrel. They increased it with fracking. But is the supply going to stay increased at $45 a barrel? And where I'm going with this is how much of, if their prediction is correct, that oil prices will stay low until 2020 for the next 5 years. If that's correct, how much of those low prices are due to increased supply and how much are due to an anticipated low demand? And if there's a low demand, that implies that they expect the world to stay in recession and or depression until 2020. I mean, if they say, oh, well, everything's going to, just another 6 months and everything's going to be fine and the U.S. economy is going to be great and the rest of that sort of thing, well, then demand should go up. So what do you think, Melody? Is this prediction viable? Can they predict that they're going to stay low for five more years? Is it even possible to make a reasonable prediction of where the price of oil is going to be 5 years from now? Is that even reasonable? And if so, if it's going to stay low, is it because of increased supply or is it primarily because of diminished demand?
Well, I don't think the International Energy Agency predicted oil to drop to $40 when it was 100.
That's
and
probably
110. Right. So, you know, you can't
their
really
track
sell.
Record, their yeah. track record is not something to be admired.
It's Paris-based. Now, I love Paris, but...
Well, they only work 3 days a week on
take a two-hour lunch
and have a couple of margaritas or whatever, so you can't exactly hold them to the same standards.
But I do think we're seeing a major shift, and again, it comes back to what is the truth of bringing the barrel of oil down to $43 from 100, and what's it going to, you know, what's going to happen, like you said, between now and 2020? I mean, that's only
five
not that far. I mean, it isn't that far from now. And I think we'll be in far worse shape in 2020 than what we are at now. So
I don't know that we'll be in worse shape. We may be in worse shape for 1 year or 2 years out of the next five. I won't argue that. By 2020, you know, I don't imagine that we're going to be in worse shape. We might not be any better off. But we're in a survivable situation as it is. But we're going to go through a trough in the meantime, in my opinion.
I think it will be worse in 2020.
Maybe.
Because they're going to extend this out, what I believe, just by approving a two-year budget and just basically ignoring a debt ceiling for 2 years. It's going to be all about the election year, and it's all going to be about Obama leaving office, and, you know, something's going to happen between now and those 2 years. And when something happens, it's going to take a year or two just to settle the dust and so forth, if we're talking about a world that is trillions of dollars in debt. So I think, you know, I don't think by 2020 we have all our social programs here that are basically are ready to be folded up and, you know, with no payments here in the next couple of years. I mean, there's predictions, oh, Social Security can go till 2025 or 2028 or 2030, but they're all wrong. There's all IOUs in there now. So it just depends on how long they can keep this going. The longer they, you know, can hold it together, the certainly, you know, 2020. I mean, it's just not that far away. So oil at $80 per barrel in 2020, yeah. But what's the truth of it being at 43 now?
Well, and then there's questions of inflation and whatever between now and then. There's one more article that we can mention briefly before we take our break. This is from Zero Hedge, and the headline is Saudi Arabia will be broke in
five years,
according to an International Monetary Fund prediction.
Yeah.
As crazy as it sounds, the Saudis are going broke.
So why? Problem,
however, is the outlook. They go on, they're just saying, look, Saudi Arabia, now, they have been the financial cornerstone for the Middle East, and whatever stability we may have been able to find in the Middle East, a lot of that was based on Saudi Arabia having fabulous wealth. If they're going to go broke within 5 years, it means, well, the price of oil is going down. It means that the instability in the Middle East is going to become explosive, more so than what we see, more so than what we're used to. Let's take a.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are they going broke or are they running out of oil?
Well, same thing.
Well, no.
When they run out of oil, it's the vast majority of their money is made from selling oil.
Yeah, but I mean, if there really was such a thing as peak oil, and they're actually running out of oil.
Well, it may not be that. I don't know that I necessarily believe in peak oil, but there are peak oil for different oil fields. You know, you can pump a field down dry, and then what? And it may be that they're just talking, this is just a variation on the other article we're reading from. They said the price of oil is going to stay down for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and they're going broke by doing it.
Well,
if they're controlling and they're not bringing back the...
I don't think they're controlling. They instigated this, but I think they're now out of control. I'm not sure what's going on, but strange things. It does not bode well for the Middle East. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And during the break, Melody and I were just talking about, you know, finding the truth. What is the truth behind how much oil is there? Is the peak oil theory valid or is it invalid? And there are people who believe, I think the theory is propagated over the course of the last 10 years, maybe more. They think that petroleum is actually being generated within the earth. It's not just the result of dead dinosaurs and plants that are packed up in a cavern and it's rotted until they turned oil. It's that there is a process going on inside the earth that produces more and more and more crude oil. And if that's true, then it appears that we are not going to run out of oil anytime soon, and the peak oil theory is invalid. And the problem you have, 100 years ago, we could all believe in something like peak oil. Today, we wonder, what is the truth? Is it peak oil, or is that a valid theory? Is it not a valid theory? And the same principle applies to a lot of things. What's the truth about quantitative easing? What's the truth about near-zero interest rates? Are they good, bad, indifferent? Can they be sustained? Are they harmful? You know, how long can this go on? What is the truth? 100 years ago, we could believe in things that were false. And it didn't hurt us. We still had a consensus, and we all believed in peak oil because that's the way it had to be. That was just the logic of the situation. We could believe in that, and we had a kind of consensus, even if our ideas were mistaken. We all agreed on it. Right now, when we talk about the truth, you have to pretty much specify the truth at a particular date and time. Because it seems like it's changing. Even if you know what the truth is right this minute, a day from now, a week from now, certainly a year from now, whatever it is that you think is true is going to be modified. And so we're not just talking about how the quality of the knowledge you have and the validity of your beliefs. We're talking about things are changing so rapidly that it's hard to just point out and say, that's true, right? That's true. Because we think in terms of truth. If it's true today, it'll be true tomorrow, and a year from now, and 20 years, and 100 years from now. And increasingly, you know, if we find something that's true for 2 years, that's a long time. And then we've got a new variation on what had previously been thought to be true. It just becomes confusing. It's challenging. You have no choice other than to try to keep up with the changes. But I think you do have to take the changes with a certain amount of salt, because you have to assume that whatever is changing today will change again tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. So you can't exactly get excited about it. You need to stay informed. But on the other hand, you don't need to panic. But it is difficult just because of the rate of change, not the quality of the information, but how fast is it changing? Becomes confusing, bewildering, and for some people even frightening. So, are you afraid of the changes, Melody?
Mm-mm.
No. You haven't been paying attention, that's why.
No, I always pay attention.
You're not afraid of the changes. You don't
I always pay attention.
To the situation.
I always pay attention. So anyway, you know, it's interesting just now, I guess, I think it was... Donald Trump talks about Keystone and the prophets, and he said he would certainly approve the pipeline if he was elected, but the Trans-Canada would have to reapply for the new permit with the U.S. government to review the permits. And what's interesting, though, is the only thing I don't like about Donald Trump is his acceptance, and he thinks that eminent domain is a good thing. And he's used it for his projects, you know, he doesn't see any reason why it cannot be used, and he thinks it's a necessary tool for developers to acquire property, to build roads, sewers, and, you know, maybe some other infrastructure projects. Well, tell that to the people who have lost their property. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline, there's other pipelines that are coming down from Canada, and people have been fighting for their properties, you know, in states and, you know, like Nebraska, Wisconsin, and, you know, where these pipelines are coming down and across the country that I believe we're supposed to match up with the Keystone. I don't have the map right in front of me. The Keystone was the final end of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe in eminent domain. I believe it's, you know, hey, if a person doesn't want to sell their property, the company needs to find another route. It's as simple as that. You don't take people's property out from under them.
You know, I mean, it's an uncomfortable thing, and nobody wants to be in that position where all of a sudden somebody says, look, we need your land.
Yeah.
You got to go because we have a pipeline to run through here. I'm trying to look. Eminent domain is in the Fifth Amendment. It's allowed in the Constitution. They recognize there are circumstances where you really have to allow it. Because otherwise, if we're going to build a pipeline from wherever, point A to point B, and we can't get the land, can't get the most direct route, that pipeline is going to be up, down, backwards, going around in curves and corners and whatever, and it will become, simply because it's not running straight and it's got so many bends and bumps in it, because it has to go around the properties of the people who didn't want to sell, it becomes an inefficient pipeline. You can say the same thing with streets and highways. I mean, if we don't have eminent domain, the road from Dallas, Texas to Fort Worth is not going to be straight as an arrow. It's going to be all over, you know, and there's a point where, as unfortunate, and, you know, it's unpleasant, but the one thing about
it, so what happens, so
eminent domain has been abused. They've
absolutely had
situations where people have, governments have declared eminent domain, taken property away from some guy who lived there, a house or whatever, and they gave it to some other people because they were going to build a shopping center. A shopping center is not adequate reason for eminent domain. A highway, yeah, I think it is. A railroad track, yeah, I think it is. All right, a pipeline. If you're going to have the pipeline, if it's really good for the vast majority of people, all right, fine. Then we're going to have eminent domain. You know, but I don't see how it can be avoided, and I don't think there's a country in the world that doesn't have some variation on eminent domain.
I can understand the highways and so forth and whatnot, but not when these you're right, it's being abused, and these people are being offered prices that you know, is way below market value for their properties too. And
well,
in a lot of cases, the property is being basically stolen from, and that's wrong.
Well, I agree. There's the question. You know, there's other people that are sitting there and say, you know, I got a property here that's worth $200,000, but they want to build a pipeline right through my property. Ha ha! Which means I can get $2 million for it. I'll hold them up. I won't sell it for $200,000. I won't sell it for what it's worth. I'll need 10 times that much if you want to put your pipeline through here. So you have people on both sides. It's not just a question of the people who apply eminent domain are the bad guys. It's a question of some other people whose property is there. They try to exploit the pipeline, maximize their profits, and unjustly perhaps.
But in the meantime, Warren Buffett gets wealthier with his trains. That
Well, he needs the money.
Yeah, he needs the money.
Yeah,
now, it was a thank you for supporting Bank of America after 2008. Anyway,
an article here from CNN Money, which is a little bit interesting to me. The headline is the dollar too strong for its own good? Now, it's just interesting for me to see this kind of headline. We've been warning, look, insofar as the dollar becomes stronger, they mean it's going into deflation. They mean it's going becoming more valuable. All right. What used to cost a dollar now costs, in some instances, now costs 90 cents. Crude oil is a classic example. A year ago was $100 a barrel. Now it's $45 a barrel. All right, that's evidence of deflation. There's other evidence of inflation, whatever, but it's never where it's all inflation or it's all deflation. Are we in a period of deflation? And the answer is deflation predominant? Are we in a period of inflation? Is inflation predominant? Are most things, not all things, most things inflating in price? Then it's inflation. If most things are deflating in price, then it's deflation, even though we can find evidence of inflation here, there, and wherever. It's when they ask, is the dollar too strong for its own good, they compare it to the euro and parity and whether the dollar and euro will come to mean the same thing here in a little period of time. They are explaining that the dollar is up nearly 10% so far in 2015. Actually, it's up over 20% in the last 15 or 18 months. The main reason, economic conditions in the United States are better than Europe and Japan. Now, if our conditions are so much better than Europe and Japan, why has the Federal Reserve been seemingly terrified by the idea of raising interest rates by 0.25% for most of 8 years? That's not evidence of a strong economy. All right, that's evidence of an economy on life support. And yet they're saying this is the reason the dollar is stronger. They point out that there are some people who are going to be damaged by this, big corporations, exporters are going to be damaged by this, U.S. shoppers buying products coming in from overseas, they're getting better deals. Travelers visiting foreign countries, they're getting better deals. But they don't get to what is the fundamental issue with deflation. If the dollar is getting stronger, and most people, if they don't understand this concept of inflation, deflation, whatever, they say, yay, the dollar is getting stronger, hooray for us. Well, when the dollar gets stronger, it means that the debtors are in big, big trouble because they're paying off with more expensive dollars. This is lethal or potentially lethal. Deflation is potentially lethal for the biggest debtors, for all debtors, and especially the biggest debtor in the world, which is the United States government. It cannot be sustained, in my opinion. And what's interesting about this article is it does not discuss the threat that deflation poses for debtors. It does not discuss the threat that it poses for the United States government and the national debt. It is simply a leaf in the breeze, however, insofar as here we have CNN money. They are considering the possibility that the dollar might be too strong for its own good. And by implication, they're saying we need more inflation, which I agree with. I won't say I exactly agree with it, but from the perspective of the Federal Reserve and the government, yeah, we need more inflation. So all I'm pointing this article, the only main reason I'm bringing this article to people's attention, is just to illustrate that the idea that the dollar is too strong, it's getting too deeply associated with deflation for the good of the government, for the good of the economy, and they're beginning to talk about this. So it points, you know, to future days, future weeks, future months and years where somebody is going to finally say, okay, enough, we can't do any more deflation. We've got to make inflation happen. We've got to stop deflation. And when we do, prices will go up, up, up. If we go into serious inflation. So, you know, the world is, and perhaps we have an idea whose time has come. People are beginning to understand that just because the dollar is allegedly stronger doesn't mean the dollar is better off. Doesn't mean you and I are better off. Savers should be. If you're saving your money, strong dollar is great for savers, terrible for debtors, terrible for borrowers. We may see a change coming on in the foreseeable future. We've got about 40 seconds left, Melody. Anything you'd like to add?
A whole 40 seconds you're giving me?
You can take more if you want.
Wow. Thank you, Al.
I'm only talking about how much time is left before Frank would like to play the bumper music, the exit music.
Gee, thanks.
Now, if you'd like to longer than that, I'm sure you can work that out with Frank.
I think also folks need to realize that just because we have a stronger dollar and we're looking forward to interest rates going higher doesn't mean that gold will not perform. And these gold will perform whether it be during a depression or if we have inflationary or hyperinflation. So maybe that's something we need to talk about at another program so people understand how gold will work in all markets. And
I agree, but people are becoming aware. That's my main point. All right, folks, we're out of time. Frank is eager to play the music. It says one thing he enjoys is playing the music on this program. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, E. Melody. And Frank,
I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.